Chapter 41. The Craft of Kin Torvir. One hand on his sword hilt, the other holding the green and white tasseled length of the Shanchan sword, Rand ignored the others on the sparsely treed hilltop for the moment, while he studied the three camps spread out below in the mid-morning sun. Three distinct camps, and that was the rub. They were all the Kyrian and Tyran forces at his disposal. Every man else who could use sword or spear was penned in the city, or the light alone knew where. The Aiel had rounded up refugees in hordes between the Jengai Pass and here, and a few had even straggled in on their own, lured by rumors that these Aiel, at least, were not killing everyone in sight, or else too dispirited to care so long as they had a meal before dying. Too many thought they would die, at the hands of the Aiel, or the dragon reborn, or in the last battle, which they seemed to think was shaping up for any day now. A goodly number altogether, but farmers and craftsmen and shopkeepers for the most part. Some knew how to use bow or sling to fetch a rabbit, but there was not a soldier in the lot and no time to teach them. The city of Kyrian itself lay a little more than 5 miles to the west, some of the fabled topless towers of Kyrian visible above the intervening forest. The city sprawled across hills hard by the river Alguenya, encircled by Kuladin's Shido and those who had joined him. One haphazard set of tents and cook fires in the long, shallow valley below Rand held some 800 Tyrans, armored men. Nearly half were defenders of the stone in burnished breastplates and rimmed helmets, their plump coat sleeves striped black and gold. The rest were levies from a double handful of lords whose banners and pennants made a circle in the camp's center, around the silver crescent and stars of the High Lord Wyroman. Guards stood thickly along their picket lines, as if they expected a raid against the horses any minute. 300 paces away, the second camp guarded their horses as tightly. The animals were a mixed lot, few approaching the fine arched neck stock of Tyr, and some former plow and cart horses were tied along those ropes, or Rand missed his guess. The Kyrianen numbered perhaps 100 more than the Tyrans, but their tents were fewer and most often patched, and their banners and khan represented some 70-odd lords. Few Kyrianen nobles still had many retainers, and the army had broken apart early in the civil war. The last gathering lay another 500 paces along, full of Kyrianen for the most part, yet well and truly separated from the others by more than distance. Larger than the other pair combined, this camp held few tents or horses. It displayed no banners, and only the officers wore khan. The small pennants on their backs in solid colors meant to pick them out for their men rather than signify a house. Infantry might be necessary, but rare was the Lord of Tyr or Kyrian, either one, who would admit it. Certainly none would agree to actually lead such. It was the most orderly of the camps, though, the cook fires in neat rows, the long pikes stacked upright where they could be seized in a moment, and clusters of archers or crossbowmen dotted along the lines. According to Lan, discipline kept men alive in battle, but infantry were more likely to know it and believe it than cavalry. The three groups were supposedly together under the same command. The High Lord Wyroman had brought them in from the south late the day before. But the two camps of horsemen watched each other nearly as warily as they did the Aiel on the surrounding hills, the Tyrans with a dose of contempt that the Kyrianen echoed in ignoring the third, which in turn eyed the others sullenly. Rand's followers, his allies, and as ready to fight each other as anyone else. Still pretending to study the camps, Rand examined Wyroman, helmetless and iron-spined straight nearby. Two younger men, minor Tyran lords, hung at the High Lord's heels, dark beards trimmed and oiled in perfect imitation of Wyroman's, except that his was streaked with gray, and their breastplates, worn over brightly striped coats, bore goldwork only a touch less ornate than his. Aloof, apart from everyone else on the hilltop, yet close to Rand, they could have been waiting for some martial ceremony at a royal court, except for the sweat rolling down their faces. They ignored that as well, though. The High Lord's sigil lacked only a few stars to duplicate Lanfear's, but the long-nosed fellow was not her in disguise, with his mainly gray hair oiled like his beard and combed in a vain attempt to hide its thinness. He had been coming north with reinforcements from Tyr when he heard that Aiel were attacking the city of Cairhien itself. Instead of turning back or sitting still, he continued north as hard as his horses could stand, gathering what forces he found along the way. That was the good news of Wyroman. The bad was that he had fully expected to dispel the Shido around Cairhien with what he had brought. He still did, and he was none too happy that Rand would not let him be about it, or that he was surrounded by Aiel. One Aiel was no different from another to Wyroman, to the others too, for that matter. One of the young lords pointedly sniffed a scented silk handkerchief whenever he looked at an Aiel. Rand wondered how long the fellow would survive, and what Rand would have to do about it when he died. Wyroman noticed Rand watching and cleared his throat.
"My lord dragon," he began in a gravelly bark, "one good charge will scatter them like quail."
He slapped his gauntlets against his palm loudly.
"Foot never stands up to horse. I will send in the carrion to flush them, then follow with my—"
Rand cut him off. Could the man count at all? Did the number of Aiel he could see here give him no clue to how many might be around the city? It did not matter. Rand had heard as much of this as he could stomach.
"You are certain of the news you bring from Tyr?"
Wyroman blinked.
"News, my lord dragon? What? Oh, that. Burn my soul, there's nothing to that. Ilianer pirates often try to raid along the coast."
They were more than trying by what the man had said when he arrived.
"And the attacks on the plains of Morado? Do they often do that as well?"
"Why, burn my soul, those are just brigands."
It was more statement of fact than protest.
"Perhaps not Ilianers at all, but certainly not soldiers. The jumble those Ilianers make of things, who can say whether king or assemblage or council of nine has the whip hand on any given day? Yet if they do decide to move, it will be armies striking at Tyr under the golden bees, not raiders burning merchants' wagons in border farms. You can mark me on that."
"If you wish it," Rand replied, as politely as he could. Whatever power the assemblage or the Council of Nine or Matin Stepaneost and Balgar had, it was what Samael chose to leave them. But relatively few knew that the Forsaken were loose already. Some who should know refused to believe or ignored it, as if that would make the Forsaken go away, or seemed to think that if it had to happen, it would be in some vague and preferably distant future. There was no point in trying to convince Wyroman, whichever group he belonged in. The man's belief or disbelief changed nothing. The High Lord scowled at the hollow between the hills, more specifically at the two Cairhienan camps.
"With no proper rule here as yet, who can say what riffraff has drifted south?"
Grimacing, he slapped his gauntlets even harder before turning back to Rand.
"Well, we will bring them to heel soon enough for you, my lord dragon. If you will only give the order, I can drive."
Rand brushed past him, not listening, though Wyroman followed, still asking authority to attack, the other two trailing him like heel hounds. The man was a stone-blind fool. They were not alone, of course. The hilltop was crowded, really. Sulin had 100 Fardarai's Mai arrayed around the peak, for one thing, every last one looking even more ready to don her veil than Aiel usually did. It was not only the nearness of the Shido that had Sulin on edge. In mockery of Rand's contempt for the suspicions in the camps below, Anila and two maidens were never far from Wyroman and his lordlings. And the closer they stood to Rand, the more the three maidens looked about to don veils. Not far off, Avienda stood talking with a dozen or more wise ones, shawls looped over their elbows, all but she decked in bracelets and necklaces. Surprisingly, it was a bony white-haired woman, even older than Bear, who seemed to be taking the lead. Rand would have expected Amis or Bear, but even they shut up as soon as Soralia spoke. Melaine was with Bale, halfway between the other wise ones and the other clan chiefs. She kept adjusting the coat of Bale's cut and sore, as if he did not know how to dress himself, and he had the patient look of a man reminding himself of all the reasons he had married. It might be personal, but Rand suspected the wise ones were trying to influence the chiefs again. If that was the case,
he would learn the particulars soon enough. It was Avienda who held Rand's eye, though. She smiled at him briefly before returning to listening to Sorlia. A friendly smile, but no more. That was something, he supposed. She had not lashed out at him once since what had happened between them, and if she sometimes made an acid comment, it was no sharper than what he might have expected from Egwene. Except the one time he had brought up marriage again. Then she had scorched his ears so thoroughly that he had left it alone thereafter. But friendly was as far as it went, though she was sometimes careless now about undressing in front of him at night. She still insisted on sleeping no more than 3 paces from him. The maidens, at any rate, seemed sure that there was a lot less than 3 paces between their blankets, and he kept expecting that certainty to spread, but so far it had not. Egwene would come down on him like a falling tree if she even suspected something like that. It was easy enough for her to talk of Elaine, but he could not even puzzle out Avienda, and she was right there in front of him. All in all, he was tenser than ever when he as much as looked at Avienda, but she seemed more relaxed than he had ever seen her. Somehow or other, that seemed the opposite of how it should be. It all seemed topsy-turvy with her. But then, Min was the only woman who had not made him feel as if he were standing on his head half the time. Sighing, he walked on, still not listening to Wyroman. One day he was going to understand women. When he had the time to apply to it, he suspected a lifetime would not be enough, though. The clan chiefs had their own gathering of sept chiefs and representatives from the societies. Rand recognized some of them. Dark Hyrn, chief of the Jindo Tardad, and Mangan, who gave him a companionable nod, and the Tyrans, a contemptuous grimace. Spear-slender Juranai, leader of the Aethon Dor, the Red Shields, on this expedition, despite a few streaks of white in his pale brown hair, and Roydan, thick-shouldered and gray, who led Shamad Kanda, the Thunderwalkers. Those four had sometimes joined him in practicing the Aiel way of fighting without weapons since leaving the Jangai Pass. "Do you want to go hunting today?" Mangan asked as Rand passed, and Rand looked at him in surprise. "Hunting? There is not much to give sport, but we could try catching sheep in a sack." The wry glance Mangan darted at the Tyrans left little doubt what sheep he meant, though Wyroman and the others did not see. Or affected not to. The lordling with the perfumed handkerchief sniffed it again. "Another time, maybe," Rand replied, shaking his head. He thought he could have been friends with any of the four, but especially Mangan, who had a sense of humor much like Matt's. If he had no time to study women, he certainly had no time for making new friends. Little time for old friends, for that matter. Matt worried him. On the highest part of the hill, a heavy framework tower of logs thrust above the treetops, the wide platform at the top 20 spans or more above the ground. The Aiel knew nothing about working with wood on that scale, but there had been plenty among the Kyrianan refugees who did. Moiraine was waiting at the base of the first slanting ladder with Lan and Egwene. Egwene had been getting a good bit of sun. She really could have passed for Aiel except for her dark eyes. A short Aiel. He scanned her face quickly, but detected nothing except tiredness. Amis and the others must be working her too hard with her training. She would not thank him for interceding, though. "Have you decided?" Rand asked, stopping. Wyroman fell silent at last. Egwene hesitated, but Rand noted that she did not look at Moraine before nodding. "I will do what I can." Her reluctance bothered him. He had not asked Moraine. She could not use the One Power as a weapon against the Shido, not unless they threatened her, or he managed to convince her they were all dark friends. But Egwene had not taken the 3 oaths, and he had been sure she would see the necessity. Instead, she had gone white-faced when he suggested it, and had avoided him for 3 days until now. At least she had agreed. Whatever made the fight shorter against the Shido must be for the good. Moraine's face never changed, though he had no doubt what she thought. Those smooth Aes Sedai features, those Aes Sedai eyes, could register icy disapproval without altering a jot. Thrusting the piece of spear through his belt, He put foot to the first rung, and Moraine spoke.
"Why are you wearing a sword again?"
The last question he would have expected. "Why shouldn't I?" he muttered, and scrambled upward. Not a good answer, but she had caught him off balance. The half-healed wound in his side tugged as he climbed, not quite hurting, but seeming about to break open just the same. He paid it no mind. It often felt that way when he exerted himself. Ruark and the other clan chiefs came after him, Bale leaving Mullane last of all, but thankfully Wireman and his two toadies remained on the ground. The High Lord knew what was to be done. He needed and wanted no more information. Feeling Moraine's eyes following him, Rand glanced down. Not Moraine. It was Egwene watching him climb, her face so close to Aes Sedai that he could not have slid a hair through the difference. Moraine had her head together with Lan's. He hoped Egwene was not going to change her mind. On the broad platform at the top, two short, sweating young men in shirt sleeves were setting a brass-bound wooden tube, 3 paces long and bigger around than either's arm, on a pivoting frame fastened to the railing. An identical tube already sat a few paces away, where it had been almost since the tower was completed the day before. A third coatless man wiped his bald head with a striped kerchief while he growled at them.
"Easy with it! Easy, I said! You motherless weasels, knock a lens out of alignment, and I will knock your brainless heads backward to front! Fasten it tight, Jewel. Tight! If it falls while the Lord Dragon is looking through it, you both had better jump after it. Not just for him. You break my work, and you will wish you had broken your fool skulls."
Joel and the other fellow, Kale, worked on, quickly but not very visibly perturbed. They had had years to grow used to Kin Torvir's way of talking. It had been finding a craftsman who made lenses and looking glasses, and his two apprentices, among the refugees that had first given Rand the idea for this tower. At first, none of the three noticed they were not alone. The clan chiefs climbed on silent feet, and Torvir's harangue was enough to cover the sound of Rand's boots. Rand himself was startled when Lan's head popped through the open trap after Bale. Boots or no, the water made no more noise than the Aiel. Even Han stood a head taller than the Kyrianin. When they finally did see the new arrivals, the two apprentices gave wide-eyed starts as if they had never seen an Aiel before, then bent themselves in half, bowing to Rand, and stayed that way. The lensmaker jerked almost as much at the sight of the Aiel, but made a more restrained bow, wiping his head again in the middle of it.
"Told you I would have the second finish today, my Lord Dragon."
Torvir managed to get respect into his tone without making his voice one bit less gruff.
"A wonderful thought, this tower. I would never have conceived it, but once you started asking how far you could see with a looking glass. Give me time, and I will make you one to see Camelin from here, if the tower is built high enough," he added judiciously. "There are limits."
"What you've done already is more than enough, Master Torvir." More than Rand had hoped for, certainly. He had already had a look through the first looking glass. Joel and Kale were still bent at right angles, heads down.
"Perhaps you had best take your apprentices below," Rand said, "so we don't get crowded."
There was room for 4 times as many, but Torvir immediately poked Kale's shoulder with a thick finger.
"Come along, you ham-fisted stable boys. We are in the Lord Dragon's way."
The apprentices barely straightened enough to follow him, gazing round-eyed at Rand even more than at the Aiel as they vanished down the ladder. Kale was a year older than he, Joel too. Both had been born in towns bigger than he had imagined before leaving the Two Rivers. Had visited Kyrian and seen the king and the Ammerlin seat, if at a distance, while he was still tending sheep. Very likely they still knew more of the world than he in some ways. Shaking his head, he bent to the new looking-glass. Kyrian leaped into view. The forests, never particularly thick to one used to Two Rivers woods, stopped completely well short of the city, of course. High, gray, square-towered walls in a perfect square against the river mocked the hill's flowing curves. Within, more towers rose in precise pattern, marking the points of a grid, some 20 times as high as the walls or more, yet all surrounded by scaffolding. The legendary topless towers were still being rebuilt after their burning in the Aiel War. When last he had seen the city, another city had surrounded it from riverbank to riverbank. Forgate, a rabbit warren as raucous as Kyrian was solemn, all in wood. Now only a wide stretch of ash and charred timbers bordered the walls. How that fire had been kept from spreading into Kyrian itself, he could not understand. Banners decked every tower in the city, too distant to make out clearly, but scouts had described them to him. Half bore the crescents of Tyr, the other half, perhaps not surprisingly, duplicated the dragon banner he had left flying over the stone of Tyr. Not one bore the rising sun of Kyrian. Moving the looking glass only a little swept the city from his sight. On the far side of the river still stood the blackened stone shells of the granaries. Some of the Kyrian and Rand had talked to claimed the torching of the granaries had led to riots, and then King Galdrian's death, and thus to the civil war. Others said Galdrian's assassination had caused the riots and the burning. Rand doubted that he would ever know which was the truth, or whether either was. A number of burned-out hulks dotted both banks of the wide river, but none lay close to the city. Aiel had an uneasiness, fear might be too strong a word, about bodies of water they could not step across or wade. But Culloden had managed to put barriers of floating logs across the Elguenia, both above and below Kyrian, along with enough men to see they were not cut. Fire arrows had done the rest. Nothing except rats and birds could get into or out of Kyrian without Culloden's leave. The hills around the city showed little sign of a besieging army. Here and there, vultures flapped heavily, no doubt feasting on the remains of some attempt to break out. But no Shido were visible. Aiel seldom were, unless they wanted to be. Wait. Rand swung the looking glass back to a treeless hilltop perhaps a mile from the city walls. Back to a cluster of men. He could not discern faces, or much else aside from the fact that they all wore the cotton sore. One thing more. One of those men had bare arms. Culloden. Rand was sure it must be his imagination, but he thought that when Culloden moved, he could see sunlight glittering off the metallic scales encircling the man's forearms, in imitation of his own. Asmodean had put those there. Just an attempt to divert Rand's attention, to occupy him while Asmodean worked his own plans. But without that, how much would have turned out differently? Certainly he would not be standing on this tower, watching a besieged city and awaiting a battle. Suddenly, something streaked through the air on that distant hilltop. A long blur, and two of the men there went down thrashing. Staring at the fallen men, both apparently transfixed with the same spear, Culloden and the others seemed as stunned as Rand. Twisting the looking glass, Rand scanned for the man who had thrown with such force. He had to be brave, and a fool to get close enough. Rand's search widened quickly, beyond any possible range of a human arm. He was beginning to think of Ogier. Not likely. It took a great deal to rouse an Ogier into violence. When another streaking blur caught his eye. Startled, he half-straightened before jerking the glass back to Kyrian's walls. That spear, or whatever it was, had come from there. How was another matter entirely. At this distance, it was all he could do to make out an occasional someone moving on the walls or atop a tower. Raising his head, Rand found Ruark just stepping away from the other looking glass, giving up his place to Han. That was the whole reason for the tower and the glasses. Scouts brought back what word they could of how the Shido were deployed, but this way the chiefs could see for themselves the terrain in which the battle would be fought. They had worked out a plan between them already, but one more look at the land could never go amiss. Rand did not know much about battles, but Lan thought their plan a good one. At least, Rand did not know much in his own mind. Sometimes those other memories crept in, and then he seemed to know more than he wanted. "Did you see that? Those spears?
Ruark looked as puzzled as Rand knew he himself must, but the Aiel nodded.
The last took another Shido, but he crawled away. Not Cooladin, worse luck.
He gestured to the looking glass, and Rand let him take his place.
Was it such bad luck?
Cooladin's death would not end the threat to Kyrian, or to anywhere else. Now they were this side of the Dragon Wall, the Shido would not tamely return just because the man they thought was the true Ka'akarn died. It might well shake them, but not enough for that. And after all Rand had seen, he did not think Cooladin deserved so easy a way out.
I can be as hard as I must, he thought, stroking his sword hilt. For him I can.